thought those were funny. I can always guess whether or not I'm doing something right by whether or not my wife rolls her eyes at me. So, well, here we are, Scotty.
Yes.
Episode 18.
We are here.
It's the 13th of February. We're one day before the good old VD Day.
Yes, happy Valentine's Day to everyone out there.
Strangely enough, the idea for the subject of Valentine's Day, I was gonna say let's do some Valentine's Day horror movies. Scotty said, "Hey, let's do some Valentine's power couples."
From
horror. So we're gonna approach this a couple different ways and kind of get our love day on here with. There's nothing better to kick Valentine's Day into gear than a good old horror movie with your baby.
That's so, right.
First, we're going to do the history segment. It's not a very long one. I guess everybody's a little hungover from the new year still, and kind of saving funds from their history debt, so they're not, or their Christmas debt, so they're not really...
not doing a whole lot.
Not doing a whole lot of killing each other.
It's so cold, too, so...
So I'm just going to blow through this one real quick. Basically, the most horrifying thing that I could find this day in history, February 13th, 1945, was the firebombing of Dresden, which is no slouch. That was tremendous.
Yeah.
Lots and lots and lots and lots of people died.
Lots of casualties.
Anytime somebody talks about, you know, horrors of war, especially modern war, they talk about the atom bomb. Conventional bombing killed a lot more people all over the place than the atom bomb.
Oh, yeah.
Atom bomb's pretty acute, pretty horrific, but, you know...
The few and far between.
You can drop the shit out of some bombs all day long and all night long in conventionals that you can't do with the atom bombs.
Dude, when they would just carpet bomb areas, you know, you see videos of this, just bomb after bomb after bomb after bomb, just... destroying everything.
Mm-hmm. Just completely leveled the city.
Yeah.
So, pretty horrifying. Again, kind of a slow period, but, you know, we've got some births and some deaths. 1923, we got fighter pilot Chuck Yeager. Certified badass.
Household name back, you know, back in our day.
War hero. Responsible for a lot of, you know, he test piloted a lot of stuff, and he was, you know, just a badass jet pilot.
He was in front of everything with doing speed. You know, he was.
1944, Jerry Springer was born.
It's kind of a horror show when you think about it.
That's a shit show from the top to bottom. I can't believe he's so politically connected.
Like, I know.
He's got so much gravitas in like,
especially local politics where he's from.
Yeah, he was a mayor.
Yeah. You know, back in 97 when I first started working for the company that eventually was bought by Halliburton, it was at its highest point, I guess you could say, is when he really had jumped in popularity, and I had these guys that were training down here in Houston from England, and they would literally skip class to go watch Jerry Springer every day. They had to take it all in as much as possible. And it was just ridiculous, man. Trash TV, just to the extreme.
The fall of Western civilization.
That's where it began. You can track it.
1950, Peter Gabriel was born.
Yes.
If you know who he is, you love him. If you don't know who he is, then...
I've always enjoyed his music.
You need to find out. I mean, he was originally... He was the original singer for... progressive rock band Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
Then he left Genesis and sounded a lot like Genesis, and then he's still playing. He's doing
yeah.
Stuff. 1961, Henry Rollins.
He can rock. He can rock and he can act.
Yeah.
He can rock, he can act, he's got really good on a spoken word. He's kind of put his foot in his mouth a couple times as of late with some of his personal opinions on politics and suicide and whatever.
Yeah, but, you know, how many people do, though? A lot of people.
Everybody does. So
that's why you should always just not even bring it up.
Just
avoid the conversations.
Just zip it up. On this day in 1728, the world lost Cotton Mather. He's that Puritan, basically he's a shock jock of his day. He's that Puritan minister who...
Yeah.
who did the sermon "Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God."
And parodies of him have appeared in many, many movies.
To be fair, everything he said was true. You're all fucking up and you're all going to go to hell. Y'all need some Jesus. And everybody gave him the finger, and now we've got Jerry Springer. Still, Jerry Springer's still known, so maybe he wasn't too far off. 1883, the composer Wagner died. I don't know if you heard recently, and this is not Wagner, but basically in 2016, Mozart was the highest selling musical act for CDs.
Okay.
And Wagner was not too far off. Okay. So classical music is kind of taking an upswing.
Yeah.
That could be, or it could be that only people who listen to classical music are people who still buy CDs, but classical music is...
It's still there.
It's still there.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. And in 2002, Mr. Waylon Jennings died.
Yes.
Interesting story about Waylon Jennings. He was the guy who got flipped the coin he gave Ritchie Valens a seat on the plane.
Yes, it is right.
They were playing, and Ritchie Valens had the flu.
Yeah.
And
he was scared. He didn't want to fly to begin with.
He didn't want to fly, but he had the flu, and the bus didn't have a heater. So Waylon Jennings gave up his seat to Ritchie, and
rest of music history.
Yep. So Valentine's Day.
Yes.
How do you celebrate Valentine's Day?
I don't. I haven't celebrated Valentine's Day in a while. You know, I've been divorced for a while. I just try to avoid it and stay at home and relax. But I used to celebrate Valentine's Day. I used to always cook. I was a chef at one time, so I'd always just do meals at home and something real nice, and then a movie or something afterwards. So
I'm blessed to be with a cool, cool lady who doesn't really believe in Valentine's Day. Now we have. In November, we have a child's birthday. In December, we have a child's birthday. We have Christmas. We have New Year's. January. January is a little. But we celebrate an event in January. We always go to the cook-off at the end of February. So basically, this whole period of months is full of celebrations. She's like, I don't want chocolate because I'm still on my diet. You know, we can drink, we can hang out, but
I hear stories of people that just try to go to restaurants for Valentine's Day, and that is just sounds like a miserable experience.
It really is.
You know, just waiting in line. You got a reservation, but you're waiting an hour anyway to get a table. It's not for me. Definitely not my. It's not my idea of a romantic evening. That's for damn sure.
I'll tell you what, man. Cool story with my wife. So. We started dating at the end of January. And the reason we kind of marked the event was because the day she and I actually got together, we were all hanging out at a bar with some friends. And we were all, you know, but it was my buddy's last day before deploying to the Army. Mm-hmm. So we knew what day that was so we could mark it because she and I were pretty drunk in those days. But anyway, so we hooked up, we started dating. And, so that was the end of January. That was the 25th of January. February 14th rolls around. I've been dating this girl for almost 3 weeks. So how do you approach this, right? You want to be cool. You want to do something cool for Valentine's Day, but you don't want to be like, you don't want to go overboard, right?
Right.
You don't want to like, you can't like rose petal and flower her house. You also can't bring her McDonald's. Like, you got to be somewhere in
right. between. You want to limit expectations for future, but at the same time, you want to impress.
Well, you don't want to scare her off.
Yeah.
You don't want her to be like a psychopath. Fuck is this psycho, right? So, I go to the store. I buy her a little stuffed animal, cute little stuffed animal, some flowers, and make a reservation at Papado. Knowing that it's going to be crazy, but what the hell?
Yeah.
You know, right? So, I go pick her up, and I'm like, what's, you know, let's go out on the town. So we're driving around, you know, going towards Papado. She's like, well, where are we going? I was like, we're going to go to Papado. She's like, Papado, huh? And I was like, do you have a better idea? She's like, I'm not real big on Papado. You want to go to the Captain Benny's boat and eat oysters and drink beer? And I was like, dude, I'm totally with you. Like, you are the coolest chick ever. So that Valentine's Day, we went down, we ordered a dozen oysters, drank beer, ate fried shrimp and gumbo, and, you know, just got lit and watched TV on the little screen.
That's above awesome,
the
boat.
It was badass. So that was probably about the most eventful Valentine's Day. The rest of them, we just, you know, I get the girls some candy and, you know, those little boxes, and little, but not big.
That's the one to look for, man. I always bring up stand-up comics. You know me. I got to relate it. I can always relate something to some kind of stand-up comedy I saw once. Kyle Kinane was talking about one of the women that he fell in love with instantly. It was his second date. She met him at a bar, and she walks in. She's got a jar of pickled eggs for him. And he fell in love at that point, but then she went ahead and said, by the way, there's one missing because I ate one on the way over here. And she won him over right there. That was a wrap.
I got you a five-pack of beer. Nice. So how do you want to approach this, man? I got.
Let's just read off the list and let's talk about
what we're looking at. Your idea was some horror power couples. And I figured we could take this a couple of different ways. The first one is, who are some of the best power couples, like some of the best couples in horror, whether they're, you know, a team or adversaries or whatever, right? But some of the cooler couples in horror. So I just jotted a few down and we could discuss them and their impact and stuff. Well, on
I think one of the first ones that we should talk about, one of the earliest ones, would be Bride of Frankenstein and Frankenstein.
Right.
That was, you know, that was one of the earliest horror couples, I guess you could say. I'm not going to say they tried to bring romance into, you know, the series of the Frankenstein series, but it was just, you know, there was a woman there all of a sudden.
Well, in the original novel, that was his condition for letting him live. Essentially, the story of Frankenstein, which, you know, spoiler alert, Dr. Frankenstein creates the monster. Mm-hmm. As soon as the monster comes alive, he is disgusted by his creation and he rejects the monster. And the monster is left to fend for himself, and he goes out into the world, but he's made up of cadaver parts, and he's ugly, and he's rejected by everybody. But he's fully human, like he's fully realized. He's got a heart and a soul, he's got fully realized emotions. But he's also, everything that he feels is amplified. So when he gets angry, he gets really angry. And he finally tracks down Dr. Frankenstein and corners him and basically tells him, like, I'm going to kill you and everybody you've ever loved, but you have to, or you can make me a mate.
I don't want to be alone. I don't want to be alone anymore.
You can make me a companion. And Frankenstein begins work on the companion and ends up, I don't remember if he finishes it and brings her to life and then changes his mind and kills her, but the monster does never get his companion, and he ends up wrecking shop and killing Frankenstein's family and friends. So that was based on the original story, was the companion. Okay. I don't think they put it in the original movie, but that was
right.
So she has been there from the beginning.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a major power couple there.
Oh yeah, definitely. They're high up on the list. And the other, just, and this is gonna fast forward big time, but Chucky and Bride of Chucky, which I guess in pop culture today is a pretty well known horror couple. Everybody remembers Chucky and Bride of Chucky. To me, it was the worst of the movies. I didn't really care for it very much. It was very campy. It was a little bit too, compared to the first Child's Play and Bride of Chucky, it was no comparison.
It was over the top.
Yeah.
Schlocky, self-aware.
Right.
That kind of stuff. I do think her voice was perfect for for that puppet.
Yeah. Yes, it was. What's her name? I'm trying to remember her name.
Is it Jennifer Tilly?
Yes, that's it.
There's Jennifer and there's Meg Tilly.
Yeah.
And are they twins, or are they close enough in age?
I think they're just close enough.
They look almost identical.
I think Jennifer's the older one, actually.
And they both have spectacular racks.
Yes.
They're both gorgeous. And they both have those unmistakable voices.
Well, I think Jennifer Tilly is the older of the two. Okay, what do you have? Which one do you want?
I just jotted down a bunch. I think, you know, whenever it comes to Valentine's Day and you're talking about love, marriage, partnership, that whole, you know, the romance, one of the, you know, in no particular order, but I think one of the best relationships in pop culture, much less horror movies, horror culture, but in pop culture, is going to be Gomez and Morticia Adams.
Yes.
Unconditional love. They both celebrate each other's weirdness.
And they're both just hypnotized by each other.
They're just completely in love. They're hypnotized by each other. They delight in their children. Like, there's never... Like, the whole world thinks they're weird, but they don't give a shit. And they don't... They do not compromise. They don't try to be anything other than what they are.
Right, and when you think about how that family unit... They were the Cosbys before the Cosbys.
Yeah.
You know, they were the perfect family.
And, you know, when one of the kids comes home and says somebody at school's making fun of them, the advice is the same advice I give my children. Like, no, just, you know, don't listen to them. They don't know what they're talking about. You know, crazy weirdos. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Always loved the Addams Family growing up. It wasn't until I became a father that I saw just, you know, that's better than Leave It to Beaver. I mean,
it's more realistic.
It's more realistic.
Oddly enough.
And, you know, I think I've had a full-on crush on Carolyn Jones since I was old enough to know, like, feelings. little Carolyn Jones trivia for you. She actually played a character in the 77 or 75 Wonder Woman series.
Okay.
Can you guess who she played?
Poison Hazard.
She played Diana's mother.
Really?
She played Hippolyta, and she was blonde.
Really?
Yeah. Carolyn Jones was actually blonde in real life. Okay. She dyed her hair.
Yeah, for the show.
For the show.
Okay. So, well, I understand why everybody else had the same color hair. So.
But, yeah.
This is very interesting.
Yeah. Well, I told you, a lot of people were on that show.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of people on the Addams Family, too.
Okay, one couple on your list that I'd love to bring up, because they have just impressed me. Just when you think of power couples in Hollywood and in entertainment, they've lasted a long time, dude, and they don't seem to be going anywhere. But that's Rob and Sherry Zombie. They are in love, dude. I remember her from the Thundercats 69 video.
Oh yeah,
but she's been around the entire time, and that's a strong, strong relationship there.
She's been in all of his movies.
Yep,
she is his like scream queen muse.
Oh yeah,
you know, she's a B movie actress. You know, she's not, nobody else makes movies with her. I think she's pretty exclusive to Zombie.
But
yeah, I mean, and outside of the hair and the costumes and the tattoos, I mean, they seem pretty normal.
They're like a normal couple.
You know, like, I don't celebrate normal, but I mean, they're not like cutting each other like Billy Bob Thornton
wearing blood around his neck,
you know, that kind of stuff. You know, they're both into some you know, horror movie stuff, like we talked about. Dude, I've always been so inspired by Rob Zombie. It seems like, you know, he's just between his art and his
music and movies,
just everything. He's just a man in his element. Like, he was born to create. If he hadn't have made it big, he'd still be doing it.
Yeah.
Like, he'd be living in his mom's basement drawing little demons, you know. Yeah. So, but he's got his muse, man.
Have you seen 31 yet?
I have it.
I need to go pick it up. I might go buy it tonight, actually.
Like I said, my horror movie watching is so weird because of what I can get away with the kids, and 31 wasn't out on a streaming. So for me in horror movies, I've got to know that it's available, like, on Amazon.
I'll pick up the DVD and you can borrow from
me. Yeah. I've got to be able to be like, okay, I have 2 hours as of right now. And if it's on Netflix or if I'm on Amazon when I can do it right now, then I'm in. But no, I've heard it's good. Did you see Lords of Salem?
Oh yeah, yeah, I got it over here. Yeah.
I haven't seen that one either.
I'll loan you the DVD if you want to check it out.
I want to check that out because
it's a good one. It's a very deep, involved movie. It's not a slasher or anything like that. It's, you know, it has a good background. It's a good one.
I've heard nothing but good about that. But again, just not, the availability is.
It's probably the most intensive acting that Sherry did in any of the movies, just because she's so involved in the part, you know. And she was kind of a side character and everything else, but this is her movie, you know. This was all her, so it's a good one.
I'll watch it.
See where we're gonna go to next.
I threw it down there because, you know, they pulled through, but Barbara and Adam Maitland from Beetlejuice.
Yes.
You know, it's not like they had any choice. They couldn't leave the house.
They
were stuck there together. But, you know,
they still loved each other.
They still loved
each other. They didn't get on each other's nerves and everything. Well, for a little bit they did. But yeah, they made it through it and a couple survived.
You know, I think that some would have put Beetlejuice and Lydia on that list, but it was kind of strange that they made a cartoon out of their being friends when Beetlejuice was pretty lecherous.
Yes.
He was attempting to steal her soul so he could be reborn. Like, how is that going to work? But so he could just not be connected to that whole afterlife rule somehow.
Right.
But like he even pulled the finger of a previous fiance out of his pocket with the ring on it. He's not a nice guy. Not for your 16-year-old daughter to be marrying.
Oh, not at all.
So,
Is that movie though, man?
Beetlejuice
is an incredible film.
I watched it again not too long ago because it can be on with the girls. I don't want them watching it, but yeah. It can be on. But it's so great. I told you I had to make a choice between watching Beetlejuice or Friday the 13th Part 7 in the theater. Of course, I chose Beetlejuice. I'm glad I did because 7's my least favorite Friday, other than 8, but 7. But Beetlejuice is classic.
Old school Michael Keaton, he was great in that role. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a damn good movie. Just the visuals in that movie, too, were just awesome. The handrail from the staircase becoming a snake, and it's a great movie. It has some jumps, too. It's a creepy movie.
It's a creepy movie. I remember the day after I saw it. I saw it when I was probably in the 7th grade, right when it first came out, right? Mm-hmm. I remember... It wasn't scary enough that it kept me up that night, but I remember thinking about it over the next couple of days about how the caseworkers were suicides and what that meant in terms of the afterlife and penance and relationships with God and that kind of stuff. It was a thinker. Obviously, it's a comedy movie. It was not meant to take seriously, but I was,
But you actually saw corpses, and this is what you're going to end up looking like after you die.
Right, because you didn't come out as a perfect spirit. You came out looking like you did, like the guy who burnt up in his bed, cigarette.
Yeah.
That's what you look like in the afterlife.
Right, because that's how you die. Deal with it.
So, those kind of things stuck in my mind. It's like, man, you get stuck. These are the people that were left behind. These are the people that didn't go one way or the other. They're stuck on this plane looking like this. Man, I don't want to be one of those. That's messed up.
It's a great movie. The guy that got run over by the bus, that's another good one. He's flat and he's on the clips and they're just bringing him back and forth.
Beetlejuice is classic.
I hope they never remake that one.
I hope they don't touch it. You just leave it alone. Make it.
This is a good one, this is one of my favorite movies, just for sheer suspense and just dealing with Hannibal Lecter and Clarice Starling. That was a great movie. I worked at the movie theater when that came out. I used to have the poster. I wish I still had that damn thing. But when that movie came out, I hadn't really gotten into the cerebral horror stuff yet. I was just more of the gore slasher type stuff. That movie impressed me so much, man. I've seen it so many times.
Silence of the Lambs, I think, was the first time I ever saw horror as true art.
Yeah.
Like the blocking, just the cinematography of the scene of when the policeman is hung off the cage that he was in.
Yeah, but I was thinking about the same thing.
The way he's been cut open and it's a gore. I mean, in any other movie, it would have been just so gory. But the way the light hits it gives it kind of an ethereal feel, and it's not exploitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrific, but it's Lecter made art out of the situation. And it takes your mind off of the gore and puts it into a completely different spot that doesn't make it okay, but it makes it okay-er than if they would have splashed blood everywhere and had it be a Halloween scene or something.
Well, you know, I read the books after I saw the movie, and that was his intent. was to kind of make it art. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of the kills that he had in the books, it was him. Some of them were him reenacting old artwork from old executions and stuff.
Oh wow!
There was one. I remember the second book. There was in Italy. There was an execution where this guy was split down the middle, and his entrails were allowed to hang. And he in the second book, he killed somebody the exact same way to reenact that exact same portrait. The books are pretty good. I enjoy those a lot. It's like I got into them after the movie. Just the movie impressed me so much, man.
Yeah, I've never read the books. I need to. I've heard they're great.
They're real good. They're really good.
I'm weird in that, like, if I see a movie after I read the book, that doesn't bother me so much because books are generally longer and I know what they cut out. I know what they changed. When I read a book after I've seen the movie, I'm almost doing the opposite thing. Like, I'm looking for the scene from the movie, wondering when it's going to happen, or I know what's going to happen next, and then it doesn't, it bugs me. So, that's not to say I haven't done it. I've read hundreds and hundreds of books, but I never...
They did a good job between those two. It didn't take anything away from either one of them when I went back and read the book. You know, essentially, it just looked like the movie was more of a cliff notes of the book. And to me, books give you more visually because of the descriptions and everything, because you're allowed to use your own imaginations to see. And it works out perfectly between the two.
Okay. I'll have to pick
Anthony Hopkins was excellent in that. He was perfect in that role from the book. I mean, he was the guy that should have done it.
Everything he's in.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he could play Batman. And like... I always thought Anthony Hopkins would make a great Bruce Wayne for like a Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, he would.
He's not bulky, but he could act it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he could bring it on. Okay, who we're gonna go to next?
Oh,
we did this one already. Tiffany and Chuck. Oh, this is a good one. We're speaking about that earlier. Starring Michael from The Lost Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Another great movie. You know, when you first watch that movie, you think Star has got to be with somebody else.
Star is kind of annoying because you don't really she's all alluring, and then she runs hot and cold.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, okay, what's her deal? Like, is she?
I think she was more just alluring to the point where she wanted help, but she didn't want to be involved with anybody. You know, it's just her trying to play Michael to get me out of the situation.
See, I almost think that she was, and I could be wrong, but it almost seems like she was trying to lure Michael to satisfy David.
Well, I think that was the intent before. I think David made her do that in the movie.
So that David would leave Laddie alone.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, Laddie was... Yeah. Remember when Laddie pops out of the bed?
Yeah.
He's all vamped out?
Yeah.
Star didn't do that.
Right.
She was an in-between. Laddie was full.
Well, see, I think, like I said, I think that she was forced to initially by David to bring him into the group. But if you remember, whenever he went to drink the blood, she was like, don't drink it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they got to a point where she realized, this guy can help me. Let me go ahead and see what I can do with it.
So. Yeah. Lost Boys, such a great movie.
It is, man. I don't like a whole lot of vampire movies. Vampires weren't my favorite horror characters, but that's one of the vampire movies that I love.
Vampires... Did you ever read the Vampire Chronicles?
No.
Interview with the Vampire.
Oh yeah, I have. Anne Rice books.
You read the books.
I read Interview with a Vampire.
Okay.
Before the movie, so.
Vampires for me got really kind of wrecked after Interview with the Vampire. Not Interview, but I read all of the Vampire Chronicles, and is because Anne Rice's narrative style is so descriptive. Like, it's she'll describe the most detailed little bumps on a wall.
Gives you those visuals.
It's so immersive that I've described, like, whenever you're reading an Anne Rice, like, after a while your eyes start to burn because you're stuck in it so long. Mm-hmm. When you pull out, it feels like you're coming out of a pool. Like, it's just that much of a world change.
Right.
She wove these worlds that were so real, and it's our world, right? But the relationships go thousands of years.
Yeah.
Like, Lestat, who was kind of a cocky dick in Interview with the Vampire, in Vampire Lestat gets to tell his own story. And the reason why he is the way he is, and I'm not going to go deep into it, but he came from like a couple hundred years before Louis did. And immediately, like, he was lured because he was blonde. He was blonde and good looking.
Mm-hmm.
He was lured by a mad vampire who turned him and then immediately jumped in the fire.
Yeah.
And he was just left to his own devices. He had nobody to teach him, nobody to show him anything, like, no mentor whatsoever. And the first thing he does is, like, break every single law that the vampires had. And he makes nothing but enemies, like, left and right, and up one side, down the other, and mm-hmm. he escapes death and everything. And he always prevails. And it gives him kind of a cockiness that helps him survive. Then when he meets Louis, he's more or less like, okay, it's time for me to, like, settle down. I'm going to kick back. We're going to, like... So he meets a rich plantation owner, and, you know...
Just take advantage of what we have.
Take advantage of what we have or whatever. And then Louis ends up screwing it up because he's so pensive or whatever that he expects Lestat to give him answers he doesn't have. It very, very much, like... In the movie, they, you know, it looks like they might be gay. They're thoroughly gay in the books.
Yeah.
Except for the vampires lose all sexual urges or whatever mm-hmm. after they die. You know, after they when the human dies and they become a vampire, there's no more sex. So they're not really, like...
Vampires don't reproduce. They just create more vampires.
Right. They're not boning, but they have that same romantic relationship. But their world and their powers and who they are and what they can do and how much stronger they get as they age and all of this stuff. Anybody else who tried to touch vampires failed hard in my mind. Like, they just couldn't
compare
touch
to it.
So unless it was like an over the top scary vampire, like the John Carpenter vampires where they're just like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, I can get into monster vampires, but, like, French New Orleans vampires, that's the end for me.
It was, yeah.
Which, you know, in our Halloween, or our Halloween, in our Valentine's Day power cuppy, Louis and Lestat.
That would be one, yes. That would be a very strong one, actually.
It's a very strong
one. Immortal couple and round forever.
And, you know, good on Anne Rice for... You know, not being worried about what people would think, because they're mainstream novels. You know, they're freaking good.
They're huge. I mean, there was a time Anne Rice was known. She was a name spoken by a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people loved her books. They made Interview with a Vampire into a movie because mm-hmm. of that. I don't know why, but I like various types of vampires. I have no problem with somebody just not to say reinventing what a vampire is. But just giving us a different idea of what it could possibly be. I mean, that's why Cassidy from Preacher, I love Cassidy from Preacher, because he's a vampire that doesn't care what kind of blood he gets, he just needs blood to go ahead and heal himself. You know, it could be a cow, it could be whatever he can get his hands on.
It was 30 Days of Night was what I was thinking of.
Okay.
Those are monster vampires.
Yeah, those are more zombie-like vampires, just kind of like the vampires from Blade 2, the ones that had the virus that would just, they just want to kill, and mm-hmm. that's it. They didn't have personalities. They just, I'm going to kill people.
But like when Twilight came out, for example, and it's made billions. So you can't knock it on content alone. And I haven't read them, to be fair. My wife's read them all. She loved them. But it's one thing that bothers me in like reinventing. I don't mind, like you say, if they reinvent something, that's.
Well, there's certain things, certain elements you stick with when it comes to them.
Exactly.
Right.
There's got to be some kind of... Like, Superman always flies. If he can't fly, he lost his power to fly.
I got his car somewhere around here.
But Superman always needs to be able to fly. That's just how it works. You can't... If you take that away from him, he's no longer Superman.
Right.
So, a vampire has to burn in sunlight.
Yes.
Has to be at least somewhat afraid of religious symbols.
Mm-hmm.
The stake through the heart. That's a big one.
Right, and blood. The blood aspect.
And needs to have the drive for blood. Like, those are some absolutes.
Right.
You take any one of those away, like what's his name in Twilight can go out in the sun, but he sparkles. Like, No, that's not. That's too far off the reservation for my.
And the immortal aspect of it too. Just unless yeah. it's one of those certain things, because Cassidy and Preacher, he tried to kill himself. He tried to get Preacher to save him. He said, "I'm going to walk out in the sun, and I want you to save me." And Preacher didn't, but he survived anyway. You know, just he was this burnt up pile of crap. You know, right. that they had to keep trying to give him blood, whatever blood they could, to get him to regenerate himself, and heal up and stuff. But the sunlight thing has to be there. It doesn't make sense if it's not.
Right.
The creatures of the night. You know, why else. Are you a creature of the night if you can go out during the day?
Yeah, and you just create your own new monster.
Yeah.
For our concern. Like,
except for Blade. Blade, it's okay for Blade to do it.
Well, he's a half-breed.
Yeah.
So he can. Like, you can add elements that
yeah.
change powers.
God, but. I love the first Blade when Deacon Frost has the suntan lotion on. He's got a half-inch thick cover himself to go out in the sun.
Well, is it, you know, power couples? I mean, I wouldn't. They're both dead, so it doesn't matter. But like Dracula and Frankenstein, those, I mean, they didn't exist in the same universe until Universal brought them together. Right. But you
had those Boris Karloff monsters that were just you put them together. But you could put the Wolfman in there too. Those three, that's definitely a trinity right there, man.
Mm-hmm. So let's see here. You know, Mina and Dracula.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, that's only in the Bram Stoker's,
Dracula,
movie.
Right.
In the book, Mina was not friendly towards Dracula.
Okay.
He was trying to get her, but she.
Did you enjoy Bram Stoker's Dracula?
I really did when it came out. I really did. I mean, I see it now for all its flaws.
I enjoy it, but the build up to it getting started just took too long. I think that's what keeps a lot of people away from it is, you know, you kind of want to get into it fairly quickly, and it's a long build up to get to that point where, you know, it's you're really into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good movie. I enjoy it. Well, you get through the whole movie and you can't help but like it.
Yeah.
You know, it did an excellent job with it.
Anthony Hopkins, I mean, all those actors were in their prime. The only one that's not good is Keanu Reeves, because he can't throw on an English accent.
He's
his
one
life.
Character just doing different things.
But, No, I really enjoyed that. And then whenever I read the book, I saw so many, like, it follows it really well to the actual book. Really kind of the difference is that Dracula is much more evil and much more sinister in the original book.
Uh-huh.
He's a demon.
Yeah.
He's a straight up creature from hell. He's fully damned. He smells bad. He's not pretty. You know, he can change his appearance to where he appears pretty
right.
for short times to allure, but it's more like a angler fish with a light. Like,
mm-hmm.
he's not good in any way.
But similar to the vampire in Fright Night. You know, there was an odor that came from it. You know, this one of the things that he describes in the house is the smell.
Mm-hmm.
And when he turns, he's an evil-looking bastard, man. You know, he covers it up real well. But when he vamps out, I guess you could say, you see that demon come out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his brow comes up and, you know, those fangs drop out. And it's what it should be.
Yeah, they're bad guys.
Shouldn't be a guy in purple tights with a bat belt buckle.
The origin of what year is that?
I think this was in 67, I think.
Wow.
But yeah, I had never seen that one before, so when it picked up. We're looking at a Dracula comic book that I had never seen before where Dracula's wearing purple tights with a
Batman
shiny bat belt buckle.
The origin of
66.
The origin of the new Dracula.
Okay, moving on.
I did write down Lestat and Louis.
Yeah, sure did.
I just got lost in the list.
And right above that, I like that one because it's the old song by UCFO Split Personality. We got Jekyll and Hyde.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't have one without the other.
That's right. It's been so long since I've gone over that story and seen any of the movies or anything. They've had a lot of different variations of it that have come out that weren't called Jekyll and Hyde, but were just the same type of thing. Do you want to go ahead and expand on that?
Well, it was written at a time where mental health was not well understood. As I'm saying that now as if we think mental health is well understood, but Things like schizophrenia, multiple personality disorder, even manic depression.
Those looked upon as possession sometimes.
This looked on as possession, but even your most straightforward doctors who were looking for a medical cause, you have somebody, you know, that switches gears on you like that, which is, you know, they're very nice, and then they switch to somebody who's very violent. So Robert Louis Stevenson wrote the story, you know, and Jekyll and Hyde, the original story is, you know, you have Dr. Jekyll is a affable person, but he's basically trying to study mental health, for lack of a better word. So he invents this, or he creates this drug that can awaken the dark side. You know, he can open up the pathways in the brain and induce the split personality. Well, when he does, he experiments on himself. It opens up Mr. Hyde. And I don't remember if in the story he actually changes physical form, but his personality changes to the point where Jekyll is lost. It's a complete personality change, and Mr. Hyde goes out and hurts people and steals and, you know, does bad things.
Right.
And it's been a long time since I read the book. In all of the movies, he ends up getting killed.
Yeah.
So
yeah, every one of them.
You know, he gets killed and he turns back, kind of like the werewolf turning back into the human after the silver bullet hits him. But you know, they're a power couple. If they divorced, you'd have problems.
Wednesday and Joel. That's a good pick from Adam's Family Values.
That is like the cutest couple,
man. Yeah, they are.
Like, we watch that all the time, like Thanksgiving time, even though it's a summer movie, but the whole little Thanksgiving dance that they do.
Yes.
And how Joel's parents are dropping him off. The first thing he does is look over and see Wednesday, and she like sees him, and it's like little spark, just like with Morticia and Gomez.
Yeah.
And you're like,
it's adorable, man.
This is adorable.
it's really cool.
He's her little like little gopher.
He's her mascot to her sadist. Yeah. Is what he is. He just, I'll take whatever you dish out to him. Just give it to me.
So, man, she was so cute. She was so little. You know, it's like she grew up. She's gorgeous, but man, at the time, yeah, she was
perfect for that role too. She fit the bill to a T. They did a good job casting that film, actually. Even Fester.
Both movies. I mean, if Raul Julia wouldn't have died, which I mean, he was really good. That would have been like a multi-movie franchise.
Oh yeah,
and it was so fun.
Well, look at all the storylines you'd have from the old sitcom. I mean, you'd be able to make a ton of movies from that. Mm-hmm. Each one would be fresh, you know.
Yeah.
Wouldn't lose anything.
Well, and I've seen that movie. I've seen both of them, probably a dozen times each, and they always make me laugh.
Oh yeah,
they're always funny. There's nothing.
Well, you can relate to it because you watched it as a child, and that helps a lot. Just remembering episodes and, you know, remembering the characters and everything. And
well, no shit, dude. As we add different things like the history segment to the thing to the podcast, and new ideas pop forward, I'm often tempted to be like, no, we do not talk new business. It's old business time. You know, like, just stuff that's in my head that's like movie quotes of that nature. We don't talk about old business until...
The two movie heads like us, we're going to be full of quotes, dude. God, there's so many that I use in everyday life. Because I'll be watching a movie with somebody, like, you say that all the time. I'm like, yeah, that's where I got it from.
Just like I said, just watched Caddyshack the other night, where Bill Murray sitting there, he's like, oh, you know, took the Dalai Lama out and, you know, showed him a good time, and he played the game, and at the end he signed my card, he didn't tip, but he said, when I die, I'll have full consciousness. So, you know, I got that going for me. I'm just like, how often have any of us been on the receiving end of a shitty tip? Or somebody's like, it's like, you know, hey, you know, I say this as I'm looking for some people to volunteer for some shit for the podcast. But hey, you know, come, I want your band to come play at my bar. We can't pay you, but you'll get exposure.
I like, got that going for him.
I don't need exposure. I need money.
Like, can't eat exposure.
Just, starting to lose my voice a little bit. Okay, we already did Star and Michael.
Yep.
I talked about Scary Dad and Bride of Scary Dad earlier. That's my yes, that's my sweetheart yes. on Valentine's Day. You know, probably in the current paradigm, probably the most one of the more popular power couples in horror would be Jack and Sally.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Well
known with adults and children alike.
Yep. Catherine O'Hara, who was the mom in Beetlejuice, is the voice for Sally.
Okay.
Kevin's mom from Home Alone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, now, of course, Nightmare came out in 93.
Yep.
So that's 24 years now. 23, 24 years. But I always liked Catherine O'Hara. She was in all, she, you know, she was a dramatic actress. She made most of her her big movie roles in that, you know, early 90s era, you know, with Beetlejuice. Mm. And when I found out that she was the voice for Sally, and then I saw her, I like saw her in a whole different light. I'm just like, wow, I mean, she's talented as hell.
Right.
But like, wow, that's awesome, you know? It's cool that Tim Burton kind of keeps things in the family.
Now, yeah.
He's kept it in the family a little too close for way too long, but that's neither here nor there. But she did a good job in Beetlejuice.
Oh, yes, she did. Every movie she's in, she does a good job. I mean, she's a very, very good actress. Pretty, too. Definitely one you remember.
Have you seen Let the Right One In?
No, I was looking at that. I was wondering what
Have you heard of no. Let Me In?
No.
Okay, so I have not read the book.
Uh-huh.
The book's on Mount to be read. It's apparently one of the best horror books that's ever been written.
Really? Who's by?
Some Norwegian guy.
Okay.
I've seen Let the Right One In, which is the Swedish version. Yeah, he's a Swedish guy.
Okay.
It's the Swedish version of this book. There is another one called Let Me In, which is an Americanized version of the same story.
Okay,
but what it is about is there is a little boy who's neglected, kind of left alone. He lives in an apartment. And he's bullied by kids at school. And there's a little girl who lives next door or in the same apartment complex, and they become friends. But she lives with like her old grandpa or uncle or something.
Mm-hmm.
But she's really, really weird. And he is fully in love with her. Come to find out, she is a several hundred year old vampire. And the old guy she lives with is her familiar.
Okay.
But she's looking to upgrade. She needs a young familiar. So even though, but it's cute, the interaction, because like the little girl who plays in the movie is so intense. Like turns out she's older. She was like maybe 19, but she looks like she's like 12. And the little boy is 12. So it's like, but it's like, it's foreign, and it's snowy, and it's bleak, and it's lonely, and it's so good.
Right.
And then when the violence happens, it is no joke.
Really?
It is no joke.
Sounds like an interesting movie. Sounds real cool.
The bullies come after him,
uh-huh.
And she stops him, and
that's what I'll have to check out.
It's really, really good. So I need to read the book, because apparently the book is a lot better.
Okay.
But that movie is incredible. The Swedish version. I haven't seen the American version. Okay. I heard it did not even compare.
Really? Okay.
But
I'll look for it for sure. Is it on any of the streaming services?
It might be on Amazon.
Okay.
And my final entry, Brundlefly and Veronica from The Fly.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes.
Who doesn't break up with you when you start turning into a fly? Like, come on.
Who's going to... You have pus dripping out of your face and fingernails.
I think it's time we see other people. Like real people that don't leak things from their head and puke on their on their food to eat it.
Yeah, when she first found the hairs on his back, where she had to use a fingernail clipper to go ahead and knock them off. That was a sign right there that she needs to move on. That was just something was wrong at that point.
So, I mean, she stuck with him.
Yep. She tried to, at least. Then he tried to not let her leave. He wanted to go ahead. You need to do it too.
Yeah, he wanted her to turn into a.
This is a very good movie, man. The second one was very weak, but Jeff Goldblum did a very good job in that first one. Yeah, just to show the transition and how just physically and emotionally it just affected him. He did an excellent job in that movie.
I like the little Easter eggs, like how the computer called him Brundlefly almost immediately.
Yeah,
you don't notice it, but.
Yeah,
like the computer, like that mixed them, is like calling them the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The same, you know, it's like, whoa. that's a stick to it, lady. Like,
she was in love with him. You know, she actually cared.
I mean,
he got
sick. She didn't know he was like. I mean, it took him a while to realize what was wrong. But.
God, and the part where she had that dream where she gave birth to a maggot, that was. when I watched that movie the first time, that freaked me the hell out. That was just. Ew.
I remember that movie came out probably around the same time as RoboCop, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a scene in RoboCop where the guy's like covered in the vat of acid, and then he's melting, and then the car hits him.
Yeah,
and
he's running out.
Liquefies all over the car.
Uh-huh.
And then that scene, and then the scene from The Fly where the guy like, does he have a gun or he has something, but the fly pukes on his hand and melts his arm.
Yes, yeah.
And starts licking it back up or is about to start licking it back up. Like those like melty scenes that they had in the 80s like that. It was just good. It's like a great practical effect. You just get some green liquid shit and splash.
Let it ooze, yeah. Let everything ooze off.
It doesn't
off.
Cost much, but it's memorable. Like you don't, like,
it's effective for what it's meant to be, you know. It gets you to remember that scene, you know.
For years and years and years, those two from
well,
those
then
movies.
RoboCop, because it reminded me of Toxic Avenger, of course, whenever he came out and was running. But yeah, you can't forget that image. It's stuck there.
And we were talking, you know, about Swamp Thing, you know, and how, like, the whole movie, there's the three scenes, but where the little boy guy killed and he brings him back to life.
Uh-huh.
When she gets killed, but when his arm grows back.
Right.
When he's sitting there in the light and he reaches out and, you
just
know,
to get
the,
that little,
and that, the
little
bit of sunlight.
Of light, yeah.
So this, and the arm starts growing back as a stem. Those are the scenes that I remember the most from that movie, from seeing it when I was a kid. You know, pretty easy effect, but very effective.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
That's, you know. I believe we've hit the end of our list for Valentine's Day, man.
Yeah. How are we doing on time?
We are at 52 minutes and 55 seconds.
Look at that. Throw some bumper music in there and we're good to go.
This has been episode 18. I'm not going to leave you without some announcements, though. If you haven't checked it out already, we do have the Scary Dad's Haunted Market is our Amazon store. Scott and I go in there and basically we have all of Amazon to choose from and we pull all of the coolest stuff from Amazon. So there are vinyl Iron Maiden records in there. I mean, we're not hawking CDs, okay? Horror movie t-shirts, toys,
books.
Games, antiques, books, anything that's available on Amazon. A lot of it you can get on Prime. Some of it you can get on Amazon now. So if you're just hankering for a new copy of My Bloody Valentine and you want it on DVD and you don't want to stream it, go on Amazon. Go to Scary Dad. Click the link to Scary Dad's Haunted Market. Click on movies. Search it. Buy it. We get a couple pennies. You get a new movie. You're supporting the show by doing what you would normally do. It doesn't cost any more. There's no click-throughs. There's no nothing. It just takes you straight to Amazon through us, but we have a nice cultivated shop of only the best, and we're adding new stuff to it every day.
And we'll be adding some personal stuff, too. Look for some signed books to be coming out soon, some artwork, you know, all kind of neat things, all horror-related and all to feed your need for things that are scary.
Another thing, we keep saying it, but join the Scary Dad's Haunted Forum on Facebook. If you're on my website, on our website, on the website, there is a link to Scary Dad's haunted forum on the side, on the sidebar there. Click on it, join the group, invite your friends to group. Every 100 people we get to join the forum, we're going to do a giveaway.
Yes. It'll be some really cool stuff, trust me. It'll be worth it.
It's worth it. And it's all for a click and a like. If you like what we're doing, go to iTunes and review. Go to Spreaker and review. Share it with your friends. Like and share.
Always remember, subscribe and share. That's what we need.
That's the easiest stuff to do. So we're going to lead you out with some bumper music. Have a good Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. All you lovely couples out there. Just think about me at home eating a sandwich with my dog, watching an old horror rerun of something.
Keep it scary, guys. See you next time.
Later. Yeah.